because everything is running behind because of Rosh Chodesh. Aaron, even if you don't have places to go, other people seem to have places to go.
I just want to hear that.
Maybe I won't get to the final line. I only get to lay the foundation to wait for the next special occasion shiur. So the topic for this morning shiur was prompted by Aaron's nudging me about this new thing of this controversy going in Israel. I don't know how much of a controversy it is, but it's, what's that?
I don't think anybody's talking about it.
But it certainly is a relevant issue. The use of, in this particular case, it happened to be these RFID cards, which open doors. They don't actually open doors. They release the lock. Apparently, when you get close enough, some of them you don't need to do anything. If you have it close enough to the lock, there's communication. And by whatever mechanism, by stopping a current, it disables a magnet, so you're actually now able to physically open the door. Without that, there's a there are two magnets that are alive, and the door remains locked. So really, the discussion I really wanted to have is really just about the use of electricity on Shabbos and what the issues are. The issue obviously becomes more and more complicated as the years go on because more and more things have some type of electricity involved in them. At the Rye Town Hilton, which I believe hosts a Pesach program, and I know it hosts YU's Shuas Yarchei Kala, so there they have, I don't know if it's the whole hotel, but they certainly have a section of the hotel which has both electronic locks and it still has the old regular key locks. And that way it is appealing to a certain crowd they're trying to cater to, which simply avoids the issue. But as the way of the world is, it's moving on and it's getting harder and harder to find places where that's not the case, and it certainly raises complications. Now, theoretically, although that could be a discussion in its own right, you could always ask a non-Jew to do it for you. And I certainly have been in situations where the hotel staff will assist, but that obviously is a major inconvenience. So the question, and eventually, some places are just not going to want to have to deal with that hassle, and the question is what will be. But in the meantime, I wanted to talk about what is what are the nature of the halakhic issues involved with electricity, and maybe touch on a few minutes at the end about the recent discussion of this. So there are any number of sources here. I'm more interested actually looking at the more recent ones, but I wanted to first just lay out a foundation. The electricity was not fully understood when it was first discovered in the sense of became something that was being used for practical human usages. I assume that when Ben Franklin, when electricity hit his kite, he knew there was electricity, but, other than lighting your kite on fire, I don't assume it's a particularly useful source of energy. But obviously, as electricity began to be used for human endeavors and harnessed to human endeavors, so the issue became a topic for the poskim. Probably, really, one of the first usages was in the light bulb, which brings its own issues. It seems that Poskim early on did not really understand what exactly the nature of electricity was. My wife likes to say, count this among a few things that she thinks were hashgacha pratis, that was specific divine providence, because had electricity been fully understood, it's conceivable that it would not have been usher at all, because it doesn't really fit neatly into any categories. And if electricity were not sort of under this taboo that it occupies on one level or another, a Shabbos might have disappeared. In fact, if you take a look in the recent discussion, there was a student of Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Rav Reif, wrote a tshuva about these cards, arguing why it should be permissible. Rav Rabinovich, who is a distinguished senior Talmud Chacham, who needs nobody's haskama, the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva Birkat Moshe Malei Adumim, wrote a two-page or three-page haskama why he agrees, although one might argue that he was agreeing on different grounds. And then there were two responses. One was published by Rav Rosen of the Tzomet Institute, and that was something of a substantive response. He critiqued certain points that he assumed were minority opinions that were being assumed in the discussion. And then there's a single page follow-up from Yaakov Ariel, who's a very prominent member of the Dati Lomi world. I think he was a candidate for the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, and probably was the one who should have been it, as opposed to some hack, of the Haredi world. That's the way, you know, that's Israeli chief rabbinate politics for you. I don't know him, but I'm told he's a very serious Talmud Chacham, and he is of that Hilumi world. So he has a one-page tshuva, in which basically he doesn't argue on halachic grounds. He just says that, you know, if... You know, he's afraid what happens as soon as you start to permit the usage of electricity, that everything is going to come tumbling down. And I don't think that it is a fear that at least shouldn't concern us. You know, when I first heard the rumors, I heard it before you, Aaron, even mentioned that maybe Rabinovich had said something about using this and that. So my biggest, I know what the halachic issues are, and I understand why on some level maybe they're not so serious. But my biggest concern is that are you opening up a can of worms? Because as much of a pain as it may be having to deal with hotel doors or things like that, the idea that people maybe there are distinctions, I think that's a very important point, but then if all of a sudden the argument is, well, a smartphone's only electricity, so why not on Shabbos, you know, and maybe half Shabbos, as it is sometimes called in certain contexts. I don't know if that term has already gone through the news cycle. Is half Shabbos still around, or that's like... That was last year's Jewish Week. People heard the term half Shabbos?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I think it was a term coined by some of the youth who continued using texting on Shabbos or something like that. They kind of keep half Shabbos. They use their smartphones, but I guess they don't turn on lights and do other things. Sometimes we say that Moda Bamixas is a kofar bakol. Someone who does half a loaf is worth nothing. I don't want to say that's necessarily true, but I think that clearly beyond the question of just texting, the potential for the use of electricity to be permitted on Shabbos potentially has the potential of undermining everything that Shabbos is supposed to be, so that's why I think that. The elephant in the room that's not spoken about, but sometimes is what are the ramifications for the rest of Shabbos, forgetting about the specific issues. So Rav Ariel, who doesn't address the issue substantively, does sort of raise that issue.
Just to say that a thing like electricity shouldn't be used because Shabbos comes down, isn't that not fair in a lot of ways? So if you're saying that you shouldn't use the internet on Shabbos, I get that. You want to say, don't watch TV, whatever, I get that. But to say, you know, not to use an elevator on Shabbos, or not to turn on a light on Shabbos, or not to open your refrigerator door on Shabbos, those are different things.
So I agree. I'm not arguing from a halachic vantage point. I'm not making any argument. I'm raising the issue.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that... that there aren't distinctions between the usage, although be careful about the light bulb there that we have to talk about. But I am saying that if one had to wait, you know, there is a certain degree, I don't want to, you know, of malleability of halachic categories. You know, the chiddush that we're going to see, which is not a chiddush to you perhaps because you haven't seen the full history of the issue and views on it, of Rav Rabinovich, is that he thinks that the issue of electricity is uvdin d'chol, which by definition means not electricity, but what you actually do with the electricity. And so basically he accepts, and as he makes the point that you make, there are some things that electricity, in fact, would enhance Onik Shabbos. He appeals to an issue which is the same, but not, related but not the same issue. Rav Moshe wanted to prohibit Shabbos clocks. Rav Moshe wanted to prohibit Shabbos clocks on the grounds that it's like a Mira La'akum, and it's going to lead to Chilul Shabbos. Rav Moshe, in effect, lost on that issue. Right? Rav Moshe said, you know, whatever they were doing then, fine, but you shouldn't expand it, that people were probably using lights then. And basically we have come to use the Shabbos clock for everything, and it's, on the whole, the Shabbos clock is really an enhancement of Shabbos. You know, so you're correct. We could talk about, is it appropriate to be watching television on Shabbos by means of the Shabbos clock? Because you don't need a Shabbos clock; you could just leave the television on. But I agree. So the issue.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's a thing that's called electricity, right? Can we use it? Or can't we use it? Halachically. Then the question. There's a separate question. Should we be using it or not, and on what? That's what I'm...
Agreed. So, but part of the question is, when you look at in general in halacha, some people some people I know do not like to acknowledge this, that poskim do have meta considerations, in, particularly when they're choosing between different options and different shitos, right? It has been said, and I think that this is probably a caricature. I'm not going to say to whom it was attributed, that someone who says that the Satmar Rebbe held that Esrogei Shemitah were usher because he was an anti-Zionist, and the Rav said that Esrogei Shemitah were mutter because he was a Zionist, does not be chorus. You know, that's a statement that I've heard stated, is ridiculous. Because it's not that I presume if the Satmar Rebbe prohibited Esrogei Shemitah, it's not because it was clear that they're mutter and he decided, I'll just say it's usher because I'm an anti-Zionist. I assume what it means is that there were multiple shitas, and generally speaking, we like to accommodate and fulfill all the shitas, but the question is at what cost? So if you think supporting the Zionist enterprise is the biggest avera in the world, you know, short of Gilai Rais and Shrichas Dam and Avodah Zarah, so then why would I be lenient, why would I rely upon the minority opinion or the majority opinion that says that Esrogei Shemitah are mutter? And if I think that the Zionist enterprise is the most important thing to happen to the Jewish people in the last 1,000 years, so even if I have a minority opinion, I'll rely upon that, right? So to suggest that halacha is a sort of a rigid science and that meta considerations don't influence a choice of positions, I think is incorrect. So yes, if electricity were black on white mutter, then there's no point in getting up and saying it's usher because I'm afraid of X, Y, and Z. And in fact, we don't really have that power. We don't have the power to make gzeros, which is in effect why Rav Moshe failed in his Shabbos clock argument, because we don't have the power to make new gzeros against something, because it's not really amira l'achum. It's not telling a guy to do it. You set up a system before Shabbos. I understand Rav Moshe's concerns were not necessarily crazy. I think they turned out and they ultimately to be not warranted, but I think at the time they seemed to they were reasonable concerns. So I think that in looking at electricity, given that it's not clearly understood, you know, one might argue that if there are halachic categories that it could theoretically fit into, you might argue in prohibiting on those grounds because of what you feel it might lead to. So even if using electricity on Shabbos certainly brings certain benefits, things that would enhance Oneg Shabbos, at the same time you might decide that the cost is so great that it's simply not worth it. It's better to place it in the prohibited category. Okay, so I want to now sort of talk about some of the specific issues that were raised, some of the possibilities. I also want to point out sort of the larger category that's there, but we can't really use, even though it's applicable. There is a Yerushalmi. One of the major concerns raised about electricity that Rav Shlomo Zalman rejects, and that at least the tradition of my Rabbim, also reject, sort of following Rav Shlomo Zalman's position, is that there was a concern about bone or makiv patish. Okay, bone means you build something, you finish something. Makiv patish means you put the finishing touches, and that could apply to a system as well. I think it's probably reasonable to say that if you're an electrician and you are making a circuit, when you finish making that circuit, that is probably called makiv patish. Right? The question is not the electrician who finishes making the circuit. The question is the person who just flicks the switch on and off, which is very obviously a very different kind of activity. But there's this idea of binyan or makiv patish. The Yerushalmi makes a very interesting comment. The Yerushalmi says that all malachos have to fit into the category of one of the 39 categories of malachos that were done to build the Mishkan. And if you find something that doesn't fit in any of the categories, they put it in makiv patish. Now that's a very strange statement. That makiv patish can be sort of a catch-all, I understand. But this we like to think that the way you determine whether something is a malach or not is you see, does it match any of the 39 categories? And if it does, so you say, if it's not the av malacha itself, it's not the major category, then it's a subcategory, it's a tolda of this particular av malacha. So what does it mean that you have a malacha and you have to decide how to classify it? If it doesn't fit any of the other 38, you put it in makiv patish because it's a catch-all. But how do you know it's a malacha in the first place? So many, many years ago, Rameir Lichtenstein gave a shiur to my students where one of the things that he pointed out is that when you look at the way Chazal defined malacha, malacha was basically defined the way people worked in their lives. And one of the very interesting things is that you look at most of the malachas are in fact agricultural malachas because that's what people did. But the way Chazal decided something was a malacha, it would seem, was not starting with strictly the 39 categories and saying, well, what does it fit in? But rather, there's a sense of what is malacha. We know what malacha is, right? And then they sort of broke down those categories. So today, it's not an unreasonable argument to make that electricity is probably one of the major sort of agents that's used in so much of what we constitute as malacha today. Right? How many people in this room are work in agriculture on farms? I don't mean maybe some people work in buying and selling options on Wall Street, but how many people work on farms? How many people work in manufacturing clothing? Right? How many people work in scribal work and things like that? And I think the answer is I might be the closest one to scribal work, but the point is that's not what we do our malacha with anymore. We use electricity and its various usages. If you had to say, if there's one force that drives much of the malacha that we do, it would be electricity. And therefore, there is, even if... So the question is, how seriously do we take that, the Yerushalmi? I think the answer is, on some level, we don't take that Yerushalmi seriously. It is quoted, but I don't think, for the most part, when we talk about things, I don't think you'll find Chuvas and Poskim saying, this really isn't the malacha because it doesn't fit on the Lamites malachas, but I think it should be malacha, so let's just call it Makim Apatish. I'm not so conversant with all the responsa literature to claim that nobody ever says that, but I would think it's highly unlikely you're going to find that. So if that is the case, so we don't really, at least on a strictly legal level, we don't actually take that the Yerushalmi as an operating principle. But I think it does inform a little bit of the way we might want to think in applying halakha categories to various kinds of activities. Now, that said, I'm going to now ignore the Yerushalmi, and I think that the discussion for the most part amongst the poskim about electricity doesn't center at all on that Yerushalmi, but it really centers on the question of, does electricity in fact fit into one of the categories of existing malachos d'oraisa, or does it fit under some category d'rabbanan? So, let's first spend a few very quick minutes looking at a few of the sources that deal with Boneh and Makeh B'Patish. So the Rambam, starting with source number one, says, HaBoneh kama yivneh v'yehechayev HaBoneh kol shehu. Binyan has no shear. If you're building a house and you add one brick and you put the cement in and now you've added a brick, that's called Boneh. You don't have to, it's not finishing the house, it's adding a brick to the house. Now the Rambam and in source number two writes that kol elu hamalachos v'chol shem hayinyanam heim nikrim avos malachos. Right, he summarizes, he's gone through all the malachos now, and he says these are all called major categories of malacha and av malacha. Ketzad hu inyanam. How does this work out? Echad hachoresh o hachofer o osa charetz hareza av malacha. He's talking about Boneh now. Anybody who plows, which a plow means tearing up some of the ground, anybody who digs a hole, anybody who makes a ditch, that's called an av malacha. Shekol achas v'achas behen chafir b'karkav inyan echadu. That's all one, the same concept, and that is called, he doesn't say it in this sentence, but that's called Boneh. Now, one of the characteristics of Boneh is that it is something that's attached to the ground, which might mean that many of our uses of electricity, theoretically some, we could discuss Boneh. I'm not saying it is Boneh, but we could discuss the category of Boneh because a lot of our electricity is stuff that is, at least if you plug it into the wall, arguably you're now mechubar lekarka, which we actually like that. Some posts can really like that idea, not only as a stringency, but as a leniency. One of the questions that I get frequently is, I bought a toaster oven or an electric urn. How do I do tevila on it? How do I tovel it before I use it? And my answer to the question is, you don't. So my tradition from Shechter is that if you can't, there's nothing you can do. You're honest, it's a mitzvah saseh, but you can't do it. You don't destroy the kli in order to do that. But there are poskim who argue that something that's an electric that's plugged into the wall is used by mechubar lekarka, and mechubar lekarka is not a kli anymore for all sorts of purposes, and that's why you don't have to do tefillah. So here, the flip side would be is that you're not going to have, if I have, the recorder, there's not going to be Boneh on the recorder because it's not mechubar lekarka, but if I, plug that urn into the wall, so that could be considered mechubar, and you could have we could discuss the question of Boneh. So the Gemara in Beitza then talks about the question, can there be binyan not bekarka? Can there be binyan bekelim? This example could come up as follows. If one of the shelves here comes down on Shabbos, right, so I assume the bookcases are not mechubar lekarka, right? They're just kind of hard to move because they're heavy. I'm assuming, let's pretend they're not screwed into the wall or something like that. So what happens if one of the shelves comes down and you have to sort of put the peg back in if you want to fix the shelf? Is that a question of Boneh? It's not mechubar lekarka. So the Gemara in Beitza, and the Mishnah in Beitza, source number three, says that Shlosha Dvarim Rabban Gamliel Machmir Kedivrei Beis Shammai. He's machmir in three ways. And one of the three, at the end of the line, is Ein zok v'nasa menorah b'yom tov. You're not allowed to literally straighten up a candelabra on Yom Tov. Now the question is, what exactly is involved in straightening up a candelabra? When you first read it, it sounds like the thing fell on the floor, so you just pick it up. But apparently, there's more to it than that. So the Gemara asks, on the second source under number Gimel, Mike Ovid, what is he doing? Amar Rav Chinen bar Bisna hacha b'menorah shel chulyos askinan, the mechzei kibona. You're dealing here with a menorah which is made up of various parts. It's not one solid piece. You sort of screw the pieces together, or you click them together, and it looks like bone. The Beis Shammai Savri Yesh Binyan Bekelim, the Beis Hillel Savri Ein Binyan Bekelim, the Ein Stira Bekelim. So the Gemara explains that there is a machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, whether or not there is such a thing of Binyan Bekelim. Happens to be in the Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel was Machmir, the Mishnah says, like Beis Shammai's opinion. But we don't hold like Beis Shammai. So if we don't hold like Beis Shammai, it would seem that there would be no Binyan whatsoever when it comes to Kelim. So at least in terms of talking about our recorder now, there would be no discussion of Binyan, say by turning on the recorder. Okay. However, there could be another consideration. So the Gemara in Shabbos quotes the following. Ayil shufta bekufina demara. It's the second source from the bottom on the first page. If you were to take a pin and sort of, let's say you have a wooden handle of something, then you have a blade, and you need a pin or a screw to sort of hold it together and so that you can use it. So Rav Amar Mishum Bona, Shmuel Amar Mishum Aka Bepatish. As a machlokas, what you're chayav on. So Rav here, for some reason, assumes that you can have binyan bikli. And Shmuel says, no, it's Maka Bepatish. So immediately, even if you don't have the question of binyan, you could raise the issue of Maka Bepatish. The only thing is that Maka Bepatish, the advantage, if you're looking to find the prohibition, the advantage that Bona has over Maka Bepatish is that in order for something to be Maka Bepatish, it sort of has to be the end stage of something. Whereas to be Bona doesn't have to be the end stage. Bona can just be Kol Shehu, right? Any step in the process that moves you towards a certain conclusion could be considered Bona. So Tosfos here, the bottom Tosfos actually, writes that, you know what, how could Rav say, Shmuel's position we understand, right? You sort of... You're turning the clay into a clay, right? Right now it was a piece of wood and a handle. You put it together, you put a screw in. That's Maka Bepatish. Of course, the funny thing is you could be making a hammer. You could be making a potish in order to make, but you have to be Maka Bepatish first. So Tosfos asked the question, how can Rav say it's Bona? After all, we hold like Beis Hillel, Ein Binyan Bekelim. So Tosfos says, even though Ein Binyan Bekelim, so Tosfos says that's only certain kinds of things. He says, the Hainu Dafka b'hachzaras batei treisin o menorah shecholios. That's kind of like a thing that you put together of parts. Avol Binyan Gomor mechaye bekelim kumo bekarka. Right? This doesn't sound like, this is not a kli. This is not a kli which you regularly put together, take apart. You're making a kli, you're making a hammer, you're making an axe, and you put that piece in, you put that pin in, Rav says that's called Bona. That's Binyan Gomor. Said if I take an object that's meant to be put together, taken apart, that's not called Binyan Gomor. That's not actually called Binyan. Yeah.
Is this Tosfos where we get that opinion that like building is only if it's permanent?
No, the Mishnah already says it. That's not from Tosfos. Oh, okay. Tosfos would say the permanent issue is a separate question here. Even if Legos were permanent, you couldn't call it Bona. If you're permanent, even if you intend to, let's say, to leave Legos for a long time, anything that's meant to be taken together, put together and taken apart, it's not because it's temporary per se, but it's because it's not, there's no bona separate. If this were attached to the ground, for example, let's say your Legos were always built where the foundation is attached to the ground. So then, even if you mean to put it together and take it apart, that would still be called binyan, right? So it's not the temporary nature per se, it's the temporary nature and then it's detached from the ground. Okay. But the idea of binyan having to be of something of permanence that's miskayim is actually in the Mishnah, I think, on Daf Kuf Beis and Shabbos. Okay. So then, there are a couple of more sources. I'm not going to dwell on it at length. I want to really look at the Shulchan Aruch and the Magen Avraham, because I think that sort of plays into our discussion. The Shulchan Aruch, which is on the second sheet, it's under number Dalet, but it's the second source. The Shulchan Aruch says the following: Mita shel prakim osur lahachzira olahadka. If you have, let's say, a bed that's made up of different parts that you assemble, But if it's shel prakim, it means it's not a permanent assembly. And you can, and it can be left for an extended time, but it is also meant, let's say, to be taken apart so you can transport it and something like that. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to put it together and to tighten it. V'imtaka, if you make it really tight, chayiv chatas. It's a doraisa prohibition. He'd probably say it's makeh bepatish. V'imhi refuya, and if, in fact, you normally never tighten it, not just that it isn't tight now, but if it normally, the way it's used is not by making it a little hard to take apart, then it's mutar lechatchila, uvovad shel yahadei. So it's permissible to actually use that in the first place, right? So we might argue, if you take something like, oh, I don't know if it's this, I'm not sure this would count because it's already one piece anyway. Let's say you take our chairs, right? Folding chairs. Like, folding chairs are very easy to fold and unfold. I wouldn't say they're particularly, nothing is done bechozek, it's not tight. So we wouldn't say that in any way would be considered bona or malka bepatish. But if you had to take, and if you had sort of a, even better example, let's say you take a baby's, like a booster seat, right, then one of those fold-up seats to put it together, that's not something that's mehudak. So you would say that's not a problem to use lechatchila, as long as you don't make it really tight. But if you had a chair that you had to, if you had something like that you put the pieces together and you would normally, you could tighten it, and it might be normally used that way, you can't even put it together loosely. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The kosh shel prakim, the Shulchan Aruch says, mutal leparakol achzira b'shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch says that a kos, which is made in the same way, it's made up of different parts, he says it's permissible to put it together and to take it apart and put it together on Shabbos, and some say that it's the exact same din as a bed. All right, so he had a certain leniency by a kos, for whatever the reason, but let's put that aside for the moment. So now, the Magen Avraham writes the following. He writes in the middle of the line, "V'nirli the kosa shalana v'asuyis b'charitzim saviv u'muhudakim b'chozek l'chulei amei asar." I don't know what kind of cups, what kind of goblets the Magen Avraham had in mind, but it sounded like they sort of had ridges, and it's sort of like you screw it together a little bit. That's what it sounds like he's describing. He thinks that that's asar. He says, "V'lodami l'kisoy hakelim." It's not that. What about? So think about how do you put a cover of a lid on a jar, right? That's made to tighten for sure. So the Magen Avraham is assuming, of course, you're allowed to do that. And we could come up with a new chumra of the week and say, ah, there you go. You can't even, and since it's normal to tighten it, you can't even put it on loosely. He says, "V'lo dami l'kisei hakelim." No, it's not the same thing as coverings of kelim. Sha'asuyim kach, that are made the same way. The hasam ein osin l'kium rak l'poschon l'sogron tamid. In other words, a jar is made to open and close on a regular basis. Right? It sounds like these cups that he's describing are meant to screw together, but you don't take it apart on a regular basis. So this already opens up a very important question to lead into our discussion now. Now I want to sort of turn to the modern discussion, starting with the Chazon Ish, is that there is clearly a distinction between putting something together and using something. Now, I'm already cheating because I'm borrowing Rav Shlomo Zalman's terminology here, so I'm sort of telegraphing where he's going to go with this. But there's a difference between putting, you might have things that you screw together, and they're sort of meant to be left that way, even though you can unscrew it, it's not so difficult to do, versus something that you regularly screw and unscrew. Now, you think about that, you can imagine where I'm going with a light switch or any kind of electronic thing. The recorder is meant to be turned on and off and on and off. Right, so according to the Magen Avraham's definition, it would seem, one would argue, that in fact that's not called, let's forget Bona for the moment, that's not called Makeh Bepatish either. That's not called finishing a kli, because it's meant to be turned on and off. Okay, so a little bit history of the use of electricity and Poskim's response. As Aaron suggested earlier, the crucial, and I think all Poskim recognize, almost all Poskim, not the Chazon Ish, but most Poskim recognize the crucial first issue to be discussed in the use of electricity is not the electricity itself, but what is electricity doing for you. And in fact, originally, the main focus, electricity was used to light incandescent bulbs. And the truth be told, it doesn't matter about electricity. There was a machlokus about this, but the simple and obvious halachic approach to an incandescent bulb is that, in fact, it's a Torah prohibition, at least on Shabbos. On Yom Tov in Europe, they used to turn on lights. There were many who did. The Rav, apparently, in his house, even in America, they used to, but when he was asked, he said that's what they did in Europe. He didn't say you could do it. But turn on lights. But on Shabbos was the question. Now, the simple understanding when you look at an incandescent bulb, the tungsten filament, or whatever other metal it might be made out of, is glowing hot. That's where you get the light from. And therefore, it is considered a malacha d'oraisa of havara. The Rambam says, based upon the Gemara, that if you take metal and you heat it until it glows, that is a tolda of havara, of making a fire. And there, in other words, you can have one fire, we actually burn material, it generates light, and it consumes what it's, you know, burning, its fuel. And you can have a metal, which is heated to the point of glowing, which is also considered esh. So, independent of whether or not, you know, electricity itself is a problem, if you're using electricity to do a malacha, that should presumably be clearly prohibited. There were some achronim who wanted to say somehow it's only a grumma, you know, it's only causing, it's indirect. I will say in response to you know Rav Rosen's comments about this new technology question, I don't personally buy into any of the grumma stuff. I think if something is designed to do something, that by definition is not grumma. That's called doing it. Doesn't matter how you do it. It doesn't matter. I accept the notion that if I walk up to the door with the card on me and I know that the door is going to release the electromagnetic lock, I don't know if that's prohibited, but I am releasing the electromagnetic lock. And if I push a button on the wall, I don't care if you build in an artificial time delay, I am doing whatever happens afterwards. And if I, even without a delay, if I push the button on the wall, that is not grumma when the lights go on. That is considered my action. You have to decide whether the action is permitted, whether the use of electricity is permitted, but I don't think any of that is called grumma. Okay, so early on, the focus was on what the electricity actually did, and that still has to remain the crucial focus, right? Because electricity itself is somewhat amorphous, whereas what you're doing, I think, is very, very clear. In contemporary terms, the only kind of lighting that might be permissible with the use of electricity, if you would argue that, you know, electricity is mutter, would be the LED lighting. Said incandescent bulbs are definitely a malacha d'oraisa. Fluorescent bulbs may very well be as well. I know that people think there aren't filaments, but there actually are filaments in fluorescent bulbs. If you look at the ends of fluorescent bulbs, if you strip away the coating, you will see two incandescent filaments. You're not getting the light from the filaments. Those have to do with getting electricity to flow through the tube. It has to shear off free electrons. So you actually do create eish. The only question for those who are familiar with Hilchos Shabbos is that called the melacha she'ena tzricha legufa, that maybe you don't really need that light. It's sort of just a secondary cause. But minimally speaking, it is a rabbinic prohibition of using incandescent bulb, without a question. For the Rambam, it's definitely nisa d'oraisa. He holds melacha she'ena tzricha legufa chayiv. We don't paskin like the Rambam, but we certainly hold that it is a rabbinic prohibition. Prohibition, even if you, when you do a malacha, when you don't need the malacha per se, you're doing it for a different purpose, but nonetheless, it's still at least prohibited mid the rabbanon. Fluorescent bulbs, right? But LED bulbs do not have any kind of heated element and so on. So the Chazon Ish deals with this issue, and he wants to argue that completing a circuit is either bone or makke b'patish. He writes, because of time, I'm only going to read a little bit, but you can keep the source sheets. I did at least translate the Chazon Ish. I haven't translated after that. Od yesh bezeh mishum tikun mana. There's also a question, tikun mana, which is makeh bepatish. That's another term. Kevan shemamido al tchunaso lizrom ezerma chashmal betmidus. Since he's setting up the system to make electricity flow. The karav adavar dezeh bona minaton torek ose kli. It's like you're making a kli. All the electrical wires are attached to the house. So it's really, you don't have to get into the question, is there binyan by a kli? Is there no binyan by a kli? It's attached to the ground. It doesn't really matter. He's invoking Tosfos here. Even if you argue that the electricity is not called mechubar lekarka, let's say that which you plug in, still, when you make a kli like this, that's called bona. That was what Tosfos said in Shabbos. Okay, so he goes on and presents other sides as well. Even without bona, he says that making electricity flow is like screwing in the kli tightly, and that's also asur midaraisa. That was the Chazon Ish's position. Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I don't know if my Rebbe intended to give this impression. Intended to give this impression when I learned Shabbos with him. It's almost 30 years ago now, but he pointed out to us two tshuvas of Rav Moshe back to back. One was about a microphone, and one was about a hearing aid on Shabbos. So Rav Moshe, writing about the microphone, presents four reasons why it's problematic. Two mida oraisa, two which are scriptural concerns, and two which are mida rabbanon. So he writes that when you speak into a microphone, clearly you're using more electricity. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but let's accept that for the moment. Let's accept the premise, or maybe it was once upon a time true. If you go to the last line under the first source under Vav, it should be the third page. Ramosha says, "V'hishtamshus bekochos ha'elektriki, usage of electricity, yesh chashash isha daraisa. Af below havara." There's some concern, perhaps it might be a daraisa, even without, even if you don't say it's actually ish, even if it doesn't light a bulb. V'yesh la'ayin b'zeh tuva l'maisa. You really have to analyze this very carefully. You go to the next tshuva, and Ramosha's talking about the hearing. Now, you know his position on the microphone is that it was usher. It came to the hearing aid, Ramosha was mekel, he was lenient. So he writes, V'chashash ha'sheni, she'mishtamish b'koch elektriki b'diburo, ki d'chazinan meha she'ikach chilok ben medaber b'kol rom, le'medaber b'kol namuch. So he says, the fact that you're using more electricity, because we see that there's more electricity used when you speak in a loud voice than in a low voice. She'ulai chashash, she'ika ulai chashash malacha b'shtamshus b'koch elektriki, that there is, perhaps, a concern of malacha by using the force of electricity, apelo avara, nami eno iser barer, v'aflo safek barer. It's not clearly usher, and it's not even clear it's even doubtfully usher. So he goes on to explain it and so on. Right, so Ramosha, so obviously, again, this goes to the heart of the issue. Ramosha had reasons for wanting to prohibit a microphone that were very good reasons. Right, there certainly is a question about the status of electricity on Shabbos. And Ramosha throws it in there, he throws in the kitchen sink as well. On the other hand, Ramosha, when it came to what he perceived as a tzorach gadol, he didn't want to, because yesh ba'ulai chashash, that's like hedging your bets many times, right? Ulai, maybe, chashash, a concern, right, of malacha, of using electricity. But we don't really know that there's a malacha, so we're not going to prohibit hearing aids for that reason. So Ramosha is not going down the path of the Chazon Ish of suggesting a malacha. Ramosha, really, in a certain sense, Ramosha almost has it right. Right? Going back to the point that I made, at least, going back to that Yerushalmi, that sometimes we intuit something that maybe something should be prohibited, and as the way Rameir Lichtenstein suggested, because that's how we do all of our malacha today. So on the you're sort of torn here between, on the one side, your intuition tells you that this should be a malacha. On the other hand, we don't really have the power to legislate, or Shlomo Zalman would say, we don't have the power to make new gzeiros. He says that frequently. Now, Ramosha is not here talking about gzeira. He's talking about adin doraisa. And we do have the power to interpret things in such a way that makes them fall under doraisa categories. But we're not really sure about it. So that's what Ramosha says. But I think Ramosha actually gets it right. In other words, Ramosha's sense is that maybe there should be something wrong, but we're not really sure that there is. Now, Rosh Shlomo Zalman is responding to the Chazon Ish, and that's the next source, the Shut Mincha Shlomo. Rosh Shlomo Zalman has a few very, very long tshuvos in the Mincha Shlomo dealing with the issue of electricity on Shabbos and its various manifestations. It originally, I believe, was published, I don't know if he made any changes, but he published as a separate volume called the Sefer Me'orei Esh. And then I think it was subsequently reprinted in the tshuvos, in his tshuvos in the Mincha Shlomo. So he writes as follows, Nisvoyer lefi zeh, de lefi ani yazdaiti, based upon what I've explained up until now, it appears to me, de bechi haigavna, in such a case, de lo asa klal shum hadlaka, o kibuy. If a person did not do any kind of making of what's actually a fire, meaning incandescent filament, or extinguishing it, all you did was use the phone using an electrical connection. Not because the Chazon Ish, velomi shemolid. Now, molid, we have to talk about. What is molid? Molid is a Gemara in Beitza that talks about rubbing. It seems like you're rubbing some type of, kasa. I think kasa is a kos. On the linens, and apparently it would create some type of smell. I'm not sure what was there actually that was being done, and it's kind of a new smell. Now all of a sudden, these silks, the shiroi, they didn't smell before. Now they sort of look like they give off a smell on their own. So you're being molded. You're like creating something new. It's an issur de rabbanon. Now Rosh Shlomo Zalman mentions this because the Rav Yitzchak Shmelkis, the author of the Beis Yitzchak, who was a late 19th century prominent posek, argued that he thought the electricity itself was not Eish, but he said there is an Isser D'Rabbanan of Molid. So Shlomo Zalman said, based upon what I've explained, it doesn't make sense to call it Makeh B'Pat, like the Chasan Ish, nor does it make sense to call it Molid, like the Beis Yitzchak. Now he writes in parentheses, of course, he is concerned that people won't know the difference. People will think once you can use electricity, you use it for everything. But he gets to the end, skip over the parentheses, he says, "V'ayin gam bishare dea simen kufzadi dalf shagam afgam humat." He permits. Achma esa. What can I do? Shekvar horazaken. I really want to argue it's permitted, but I can't because the zaken, the sort of the elder psak, already ruled. V'hu agon moreno of Yitzchak Shmelkes al b'shut beis Yitzchak yoredea chelak beis simen lanalf b'ashematos al dvar telephone amuta ladabu bo b'shabes. He spoke about this issue. Uvetoch dvar of kasav sham. He wrote there. The kemo b'sechufei kasa ashiroi amrinam b'beitza the asur mishum demolid recha. Hu hadin, just like the Gemara said in Beitza, that's called molid. Hu hadin da osur lasos elektrisha, I don't know what that word is. What?
For connection.
No, I know what electric, what's the next word?
Verbindung, connection.
Oh, connection, okay. Sorry, I don't have Yiddish. Bishabis, ad kan lashono, v'hadavar tzara chachra. Okay, some have claimed, Rav Reif in his article claims, and he quotes Rav Avigdor Nevinsal, on this, that Rosh Shlomo Zalman really Medina held that it was mutter. No, it's just the use of electricity alone. If there are no other concerns whatsoever raised by, I mean, it's not doing a malacha or any kind of the Rabbanan, really meeker than he thought it was mutter, but he didn't want to permit it outright. Okay. So anyway, that was Rosh Shlomo Zalman's position, which I think is the one that is often adopted. Now, if you were to argue that, I want to make one observation, and I don't know if Shlomo Zalman says this, but I think that this should most definitely merge, and I think this is minog in our community and probably a lot of communities, but people don't realize it, which is that if you adopt the position of Molid, I would argue that if you have no idea that any electricity is being used, if it's not Nikar in any way, then it's not Osir. Why? Because in order to be molid, it has to give the sense that something has been created. But if nobody can see it, nobody can sense it, then it's permissible. I think that today, I think there are lots of instances people don't realize where we use appliances, we use a refrigerator, and even if there are no lights, even if you have the Shabbos thing is turned off, somewhere inside there's something that happens, there's some electricity that's used that's totally, you have no idea what's going on. And we just assume that it's permissible. Why? Because in this case, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, it doesn't make a sound. It only works. It doesn't work if you hold like the Chazon Ish. It works if you assume, I think, if you assume like Rosh Shlomo Zalman does, that it's something that's molid. Molid has to be something that's actually nikar. It has to be something that is recognizable. Otherwise, you can't say that it looks like there's a new thing here. Rav Rabinovitz, Rav Rabinovich has in his letter, and he's written about this before, he argues a slightly different approach to this. He claims, not like Rosh Shlomo Zalman, that it's an issue of molded. He thinks that the problem of using electricity is what's called uvdin d'chol. Now, uvdin d'chol might be roughly translated into English that it's not Shabbistic. Which, as you understand, now I say that, but uvdin d'chol is a halacha category. The problem is, it's a very amorphous halacha category. The Gemara will say that certain things you're not allowed to do because it's uvdin d'chol. It's like you do certain things during the week. Now, Rav Rabinovich quotes a tshuva from the Rambam, where the Rambam says, well, if you eat during the week, you're going to say you can't eat on Shabbos. Right? Because you're eating on Shabbos just like you eat during the week. Well, that's ridiculous. So Rav Rabinovich argues, he firstly goes through the history, a little bit of, you know, what happened to electricity. And then he says the following. If you look on the last, should be the last page. He says, the third line. Klal gadol limdanu harambam. He says, klal gadol limdanu harambam al elu pu'ulos gazru chachamim. The Rambam gave us some rules as to why the Chachamim prohibited certain things. Udvarim, and he says, Udvarim harbe hein sha'asru Chachamim mishum shvus. This is the Rambam speaking. There are many things that the Chachamim prohibited because of a shvus, which shvus means an isur d'rabbanon, a rabbinic prohibition on Shabbos. Mehen dvarim asurim mishum shem domim l'malachos. There are some things that are prohibited because they look like, they're similar to malachos. Umehem asaruim gizera shema yavo mehem isur skila. And some of them they prohibit, not because they look like malachas, but they're afraid that if you're allowed to do it, you will actually come to do some type of malacha. So gzeiros chachamim, this is not the Rambam anymore, hey mishnei sugim, yesh pu'ulos hadomos l'malacha mishrum kach nesru, v'yesh pu'ulos sha'alulos l'havi le'malacha. There are some which look like a malacha, and some which will eventually will cause a malacha to be done. Eina kavana sheba asadu ala lavid lidi malacha ala chashashu shimnate lo asapula mitera hadvarim yesh siku yisave sheyishkach lizoyer.
So it doesn't mean that if we let this, then somewhere down the road somebody is going to make a mistake and think you can do X. But it means if I let you do this, now immediately you're going to go too far with something.
You're not allowed to read. We don't apply this today because even our incandescent bulbs don't flicker. But you're not allowed to read by candlelight on Shabbos. People may not be aware of that. You're allowed to get hana from Neir Shabbos. It's not like Neir Chanukah, but you can't read by a candlelight on Shabbos because we're afraid that the candlelight flickers. Maybe it shouldn't apply by our candles, but an oil lamp will flicker, and you'll sort of tilt the oil lamp to the light better. You forget that it's Shabbos. You're trying to read, you tilt it, and that's a malacha of Havara. That's actually burning the fuel on Shabbos. So he goes on then to quote the Rambam's tshuva. He says, "Afgat legabe uvdin dechol hishmir rabenu b'tshuva ikaron zeh." The Rambam makes this point clear in a tshuva about uvdin dechol, about what is not Shabbistic. He says, "Im kain lo yochal kederach shu'ocha b'chol, v'lo yaseh kederach shu'mesi b'chol." You shouldn't eat like because you eat during the week. You shouldn't lie down because you lie down during the week. Zed davar baru lemevin she'ena tamotzei la'olam dvarm she'asu chachamim mishum shelo yaseh kederach shu'ocha b'chol ela dvarm she'efsher she'yagidlu m'locha. The Rambam says the chachamim didn't prohibit doing things on Shabbos if you do them during the week, unless there's some connection to malacha. You eat during the week, you can eat on Shabbos. So he goes on to basically argue that in order to prohibit something, there has to be a reason why either it looks like a malacha, or it is likely to lead into malacha. So he basically says that's how you have to analyze every single category. And his argument in this case, is that doing so, letting a person use this type of a thing is actually not, what is it going to lead to? We open doors all the time. That's not itself a malacha. There's no concern of anything you're doing here that's going to lead to a malacha. So that's why Rav Rabinovich thinks that it is permissible for these circumstances. And even though right now it's used mostly in military contexts where it's a security issue and so on, he says as it spreads, he doesn't see it as a problem, even in an ordinary context. That's Rav Rabinovich's position. Rav Rosen, in his response, and I think this is really what the issue boils down to, in his response, he argues that, in fact, he says, we don't hold like that it's Uvdin Dechol. We hold that it's molded. That's what he thinks. And on those grounds, he argues that again, I would argue, he would say that since it's clear, it's obvious to people that when you go by, the door gets unlocked, even though you yourself have to physically open the door. So he says, therefore, he would say it's niker that you're using the electricity, and electricity is usher because of molid. He disputes the characterization of Rosh Shlomo Zalman's views. He claims that Rosh Shlomo Zalman definitely held it was molid. I obviously can't wade into this thicket because I don't know any of the players here, although you read Rosh Shlomo Zalman's tshuva, it doesn't seem far-fetched that he kind of thought it was molid, wink, wink, nod, nod, because he doesn't really believe that it's molid. But that's the argument that he offered, that Rosen offers in response. But it really, in a sense, does boil down to the question of how do you see the prohibition of electricity? Is it a question of molid, that you're sort of, that creating the electrical circuit, creating the flow of electricity is like your molid or davar chadash, in which case, you'll argue in this case, it's recognizable, the impact of electricity is recognizable, and therefore you can't use it to unlock the door. Or if you argue it's only an issue of uvdin dechol, there's nothing inherent in electricity itself, it's only a question of what the electricity actually does for you, and if it doesn't look like a malacha, and it's not likely to lead to a malacha, it's not called uvdin dechol, and then it's permitted. That's what the machlokas actually boils down to. One of the interesting questions that I would want to know, I'm not going to ask Rav Rabinovich, I could theoretically, I don't think my son knows him yet, but he might know him a few months have passed in yeshiva, is what would he say about turning on, if Shlomo Zalman talks about turning a fan on Shabbos, right? I presume that if you turn on an electrical fan, and the air conditioning could be the same thing, although, you know, unless you're going to argue that if we allow you to turn on the air conditioning or the fan, you're also going to turn on, you could argue that, you're going to turn on the heat. Now, turning on heat
on Shabbos certainly will entail a malacha, because you turn on the heat, the boiler goes on, you're talking about Havara Daraisa. So unless you're going to argue that, so would he prohibit those things? On a different point, I think it's very clear that he would argue that to use a smartphone on Shabbos would be usur. Firstly, there are many of the things that you use a smartphone for, in fact, are usur. In other words, they are daber daberim tzochef tzecha, all sorts of things that you do things that are usur to do on Shabbos, and it mean business things and checking things like that. So I think he presumed will argue that that's prohibited. There are also questions whether or not writing on a screen is ksiva midrabanan. There are those, I think Rav Reif in his tshuva makes that assumption. I think that issue can be disputed, but if you assume that writing on a screen is ksiva midrabanan, then it's not even a discussion to be had. But on things that don't entail anything that look like a malacha and that aren't a malacha and won't lead to a malacha, so that's where it seems that the dispute is currently resting. And it depends upon whether or not you classify electricity itself as a molid, or whether you argue that electricity itself is nothing, and then the only question is whether or not what electricity is used for is actually called an ufin d'chol. So, if you want to know what to do, ask your local Orthodox rabbi. Yeah.
The things that affect us, the motion sensor, whatever, lights or doors and elevators, things that Manhattan people have to confront.
So let's talk about, there are a couple of separate questions. Those raise different kinds of issues. And Rav Reif himself makes the point, in other words, why some are relevant. In other words, if I have got the Shaila recently, if you have, and it could be a problem, it depends, if you have a stairwell with motion sensor lights, so if you don't need the, if you can manage the stairwell reasonably well without the lights that go on, let's say there's some a natural lighting that's coming in, then it's...
The way buildings have it is they have one light on.
Right.
You walk into the hallway, then two lights come on.
Right, so if...
There's always one on.
So if that's the case, and you really can comfortably navigate without it, so then you don't even get into this discussion, because the first issue you have to raise, you're no longer turning it on deliberately, but rather you're getting into the question of psik resha. So here already, once you're talking about a psik resha, let's say you don't care. Let's argue you don't care. This, and others, the stairwell will have light anyway. A psik resha de lo ichpas lei, something that you do A, B automatically happens, right? You go into the hallway, it automatically turns on those lights, but you're not interested. You don't care one way or the other. So by an issur d'rabbanan, we're certainly going to be lenient. And issue talking about LED lights, I don't know what's in the stairwells, for sure, a psik resha de lo ichpas lei on something that's not really even a malacha is not a problem. Even if they were fluorescent bulbs, even if they're incandescent bulbs, I can make the argument, but I'm sure they're not going to be incandescent bulbs. That's almost certain. Fluorescent bulbs, you now have to go back and visit the question of, is a fluorescent bulb a derabanan or a deraisa? So if it's a derabanan again, I'm going to say psik resha del ichpas lei on a derabanan, not a problem. But the crucial point is, even if it were deraisa, you might be able to be lenient. But the crucial point is, that's different than our situation. Because our situation, you want to enter the door, you're bringing, you need to put your tag here in order to open that, cause what happened to open the door, so you are doing it pekavana. There, you're doing something else, and the lights happen to go on, and that already, you're one step removed in a psik resha, and that already is much greater grounds for leniency. The elevator question is a better question. I think having the doorman push it, I don't think is a shaila, because you're not actually doing anything. And I don't buy into this weight thing and so on and so forth. But this would be the same question as you're pushing a button, let's say, where there were an LED light. Then you have to get into the question of, is this ovdin d'chol or is this molid, right? Presumably if it's molid, then you'd argue under most circumstances it would be prohibited. If you argue ovdin d'chol, then you have to sort of consider, really, is there any concern or not?
So what about like automatic doors?
So that is relevant to this discussion because you actually want to open the door. That's your purpose.
Okay.
So that would again fall into this discussion. I haven't seen what Rav Rabinovich wrote earlier yet. Rav Schechter mentioned to me that he thought, I mean, I don't think he agrees, but he thinks that Rav Rabinovich thought, yeah, that you could use the automatic doors. But I'm not sure if he really meant the automatic doors where you see them open automatically. And it's one of the arguments Rav Reif makes in this tshuva is that the door doesn't even open, right? All it does is you can now open the door. Right, just that releases a magnet, so but you don't even see. But now you know it's happening because you can open the door. So I don't know if he thought maybe he thought there was some concern of the hole there as well, and only in a situation like this, or maybe not. It's possible. But, yes.
How does a battery-operated hearing aid consider electricity?
I
knew what you said. Why is it considered? There is electricity flowing
from the battery.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that's.
Utility?
That's how it, you know, it's just the battery is just the power source as opposed to the power plant. Adrian?
Are there people legitimately relying on this to use the electronic hardware?
I don't know. Right now, I think it's still...
The army.
But the army, Rivrozen already... Well, I think he's got his Grumma thing there. But in the army, I think once you're talking about the army, so there's certain situations we'd let you do Malacha D'oraisa. But even in situations not, you'll see that sort of... Rav Rabinovich says explicitly, he thinks it's mutter beyond those circumstances. But in those cases, almost everybody's going to say, yes, there are needs. And even if it's not an immediate need of danger to life, you know, can the soldier go into the buildings? He wants to go to get a minyan on Shabbos. He wants to go to tefillah, right? If we're really a malacha, we tell him daven alone, right? It's not the end of the world. So I think that, but even so, we're still going to be more lenient in that particular context. The question is, and I'll call it civilian areas. So I don't know how common this particular technology is in civilian areas. Most people's houses, I assume, don't work this way.
All new apartments in Manhattan are being built though. They have fobs, all of them.
Uh-huh.
I just moved into a building.
But you also probably can have that change, no?
I have a key as well. Right, so that if there's an emergency, I can get in. But that's everything's going that way.
Well, as long as you have that key, it doesn't matter to you.
Right,
because you can use the key instead.
So give it to you. Yes. I got the key.
I got.
I'm just saying.
Right. Okay, so it's not as it's not yet the common issue. That so here's where I say ultimately the minhag is going to sort it out. Right. The question is, will someone like Rabinovich's voice become sufficiently dominant? Will that become dominant where people start doing it? Or is it going to become so common that there are workarounds that people won't? And I can't predict that particular issue. So I don't get the sense yet that this has become, outside of the military context, becoming a practice. I don't know why. What he doesn't talk about, the question of, what about like the hotel key cards? Right? Presumably that shouldn't be... I mean... There is electricity flowing, but for Rabinovich, that in itself shouldn't matter. So you have lights that flash on the thing. Yeah, only two considerations I can see there. The lights that flash, which frankly I don't think you really...
Would that be an issue?
You don't need them. That's true. And you have to be very careful in that regard, in which you do sort of... It does communicate a signal to you. You could do without it. It's true. You could cover those lights and it wouldn't make a difference. The second thing is some of them, not all of them, I don't think, maybe not anymore. I've been to some places where you hear a little bit of a noise. Someone could say, but I don't think that's a problem here, that's called Hashemah's call. Since Hashemah's call is the Rabbanan and the Mechaber doesn't hold of it, and even Hashemah's call to be prohibited, making a noise might have to be a loud enough voice. That's a pretty quiet, a pretty quiet sound. I don't think that's really an issue. So for some reason, he doesn't talk about that, which is a much more common application. I don't know what the story in Israel is, but here it's certainly every hotel I've been in recently, you know, you stick a card in, you slide a card in the thing, and, you know, if you get it right, the lights flash, and now you can open the door for a thing. So,
with Israel, I think most hotels will have the key.
Key still, right.
And they're going to, the same thing's going to be with built. They're not good, you know, there are going to be a lot of buildings not built that way. Israel's going to be.
In Israel.
Yeah,
okay,
Israel's going to be very.
There is a large amount of Jews that don't live in Israel.
Right. Yeah,
really?
I'm talking about.
So I don't know the answer to. I don't know what.
In Israel, and that's why I think it won't take off, the Chuva won't take off.
Because
in Israel, they'll never do this. Yeah. I mean, right?
You
they'll always have the workaround. Always.
Right.
So. You have half the Jewish world in Israel now, pretty much.
Right.
So they're never going to need this. They're not going to need it. So.
Right. So that remains to be seen what will happen. You know, who knows? You don't know. We don't know what the world will be in 15 years. So, okay.